Hi, Agnes here. You're listening to Two Queers, Five Books, a podcast that has sprouted from the soil of another podcast, Two Queers, Four Questions. Ezra and I are moving through the annual cycle of Torah readings week by week, taking turns with each parsha, wrestling with the text, dancing with it, flirting with it, arguing. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy. Parashat Bo. 1. And then darkness fell. The Midrash tells us that there were, in fact, two periods of darkness. During the first darkness, there was a gloom so thick no one could see each other, and during the second darkness, the darkness became even thicker, so thick that no one could move. If you were standing when the darkness fell, you remained standing. If you were sitting, you remained sitting. If you were bending over your child, you remained bent over. If you were climbing up a ladder to change a light bulb, there you were, balanced and immobile atop the ladder. I think they died, all of them, the Egyptians, before the killing of the firstborns, before the departure from Egypt. I think they died during this ninth plague, this plague of darkness. Because what is darkness if not a kind of death? Those bodies frozen in place, in chairs, up ladders, it was a kind of rigor mortis. Kulanu metim, they say. We are all dead. 2. I think this parsha is a parsha about love, and this is the breakup. It's the end of a very long relationship, a 400-year relationship. This parsha tells the end of a love story in which the lovers got tangled up in each other. They had gotten to the point where they couldn't understand themselves without the other. They didn't know how to be alone, and so the relationship ended. This week's parsha is the breakup, the awful, messy, devastating breakup. We've all known people in what we might call toxic relationships. Call it codependence, call it enmeshment, call it a controlling attachment style. You can go to the concert with Tina and you can stay over at her place, but I want you to text me, okay? Text me when you get there and text me when you leave and text me in the morning as soon as you get up and come right back home. And sometimes that feels like love, and sometimes we just want to go to the concert with Tina. But there are forms of entanglement, a blurring of self and other that can happen in any kind of close relationship. We pull people close because it is scary to be alone. When we love someone, our sense of who we are gets tied up in who that other person is. They are brave, say, and because of our intimacy with them, we get to feel that we too have some of that bravery. Or they are tender, say, and because of our intimacy with them, we get to have access to a certain kind of tenderness. But then who are we when they are gone? I know I have been in relationships like this, where I saw in someone certain qualities that I wished I had, and loving that person became a way of bringing those qualities into my life, a way that was a little easier than finding those qualities inside myself. In relationships like that, you are asking someone else to make your identity for you. You turn them into a kind of servant or slave. You are forcing them to build your pyramids. This week, I've been listening to Lou Reed sing Walk Alone. When you walk, he sings, you know you're going to walk alone. And when you talk, and when you make love, and when you die, he sings, you're going to do it alone. It's not an easy truth. Is this a way of reading these early books of Exodus? As a story in which one people, Egypt, falls in love with another people, Israel? In which Egypt comes to dominate Israel because that feels like intimacy and because difference is just too much to bear? In which the dominating people's identity gets tangled up with the subordinated people's identity, so much so that when it comes time for the subordinated people to leave, the dominating people are devastated. They spend 6 days in darkness, and they die a kind of death. 3. Let me try out another version of this story. Pharaoh is a very lonely person. He's very powerful. He controls a whole empire. Everyone comes to him with wishes and needs and deference and fear. Who is such a person to love and be loved by? Who but God? God, who is also very powerful, who also gets approached with wishes and needs and deference and fear. God, who must also be terribly lonely. And so Pharaoh falls in love with God. In fact, he feels, what luck, he's finally found a lover who understands him. When Pharaoh meets God, he can't get enough. He wants to text God all the time. He wants to talk for hours on the phone. He gets restless and moody whenever God is off doing other things on the weekend. Pharaoh feels finally understood. He feels like God is the first being to understand him, and it's because they're just so similar. They're so similar. They're almost like one being. It's like, I am God, thinks Pharaoh, and God is me. And God maybe was open to a kind of relationship with Pharaoh, but then it started to get so intense and weird, and God started to feel like Pharaoh wasn't actually talking to God or listening, just seeing God. Pharaoh was relating to a projection, to a fantasy. And God would try to say something like, "Hey, Pharaoh, we're not exactly the same, you and I." Pharaoh would order the lamb vindaloo because we love that, don't we, God? And God would get quiet and order the aloo gobi just to make a point. And Pharaoh can feel God pulling away, and it only makes him panic. It makes him cling harder. It muffles his hearing and blurs his vision. It hardens his heart. This thing he calls love, which is actually a fear of being alone, a fear of dying. When you make love, you know you're going to love alone. When you die, you know you're going to die alone. When is loving a deep form of knowing, of giving and receiving and holding and being held? And when is loving a drug we take because we're afraid of our own limitations, because we don't know how to change, because we think that love can protect us from dying? Exodus is the book in which we become a people. It's a book about togetherness, and that togetherness saves us. It fills our days with joy. We eat, we laugh, we make music, we dance, we fuck. But when we forget that we are also, all of us, alone, we start to drift into a kind of denial. We forget that there are no shortcuts, that each of us has to cross our own internal oceans and wander in our own internal deserts and face the fire and the smoke and the water and the hunger and the silence. I feel for the Egyptians in this parsha. I feel for their suffering. And I am thinking about all the cries and all the protests of the last 3 months. Let my people go. Let my people be free from the river to the sea. Is every story of domination a kind of love story? And is every moment of liberation a kind of breakup, a kind of death? 4. There's this beautiful book, Who Dies, by Stephen Levine, that I've been reading slowly for like 4 years now. It's about dying in the sense that it's about end of life. But it's also about dying in the way that the mystics talk about dying. It's about the dying we have to do every day, dying over and over and over again in order to live. Levine writes, "When we speak of loving someone, what we mean is that that person acts as a mirror for the place within us, which is love. That being becomes our contact with ourself. When that mirror is shattered, the grief that we feel is the loss of contact with that place within us, which is love. Thinking of that person as other than ourself, we mourn our loss. We re-experience our sense of separateness and isolation that originally motivated us to look outside of ourselves for that essential unity we call love. To lose someone, he is saying, is to feel we are losing ourselves. And that is the most frightening form of aloneness you can imagine. You are in darkness. You can't see your own body. You can't sit or stand. You don't know how to move. You feel that you are not there even except for this anguished and terrifying voice inside you crying out, 'I am here. I am here.' Egypt is losing Israel. Egypt feels like it is losing its mirror. Egypt feels like it is losing itself." 5. There was the first darkness, and it was dark. Then there was the second darkness, and it was darker. It was the darkness inside the dark. But there's always a third darkness. It is the darkness inside the darkness, and inside that darkness there is light. And that light is love. We are not our bravery or our tenderness. We are not our pyramids. We are not, in fact, anything except the capacity to love. Let me tell you one last version of the story. During the second 3 days, the darkness inside the darkness, the Israelites lived inside light. Darkness was everywhere for the Egyptians, but the Israelites could see. They walked among the houses and they saw the jewels of the Egyptians. They picked up the things that they had never been allowed to touch, and they were silent in the face of death. And the angels looked down from heaven, quiet and watchful, because God had never done this before, spread darkness so thickly over the planet. And the angels thought the Israelites would all be happy. A fantasy, no? To wander the homes of your oppressors invisibly? But the Israelites were silent in the houses of the people they had known. They looked and saw them frozen, and the Israelites were confused. And they came to Moses and they said, "Moses, we have all died. We are like ghosts wandering the city. Kulanu Metim," they said, "we are all dead." And Moses said, no, no, you don't understand. You're not dead. You're alive. You're surrounded by light. And the people were confused. And the people said, this darkness is death. Look at the Egyptians. They've all died. And we too, they said, we too, we must be dead. Because everything we know about ourselves is changing. And Moses said, no, no, this isn't death. This is just darkness. This is darkness, Moses said. This is life.